fashion, that kind of thing, because it was people were aware that actually to do that in the full glare of TV cameras was somewhat cruel. But I guess it was also pointed out that actually to let 21-year-old Tracy live with her dreams that were never, ever, ever going to come to reality wasn't actually the kindest thing either, because it just meant she built her life on a dream that was never, ever going to be fulfilled, with the result that I guess you waste life running after something that can never be. All of which brings us to Ecclesiastes. I don't know whether you ever had Solomon and Simon Cowell in the same mind, but one of the things I love actually is the image that we get at the end of Ecclesiastes. The words of the wise are like goads. Their collected sayings like firmly embedded nails given by one shepherd. And in many ways, Ecclesiastes is a bit like a big pointy stick. That's what a goad is. Big pointy stick, you've got it on the screen there, pushing the sort of prodding the cattle in the right direction. And Ecclesiastes is a bit like a big pointy stick. If you like to change the image slightly, Ecclesiastes is a big pointy stick that pops balloons. You're beginning to have a really massive inflated view of what life is like and how life is going to go, and the Ecclesiastes comes and goes, pop. Stop living for this dream that is never going to be real. Pop. Which actually is healthy for us. It isn't good to waste life in pointless dreams. And that's what Ecclesiastes is going to tell us. It's attributed to the teacher, who is a descendant of David. He's a king. Most people think it's likely that this is Solomon. It's very different to most books of the Bible. It's actually especially unlike stuff like what we heard this morning in Micah. You see, think about how books like Micah, the prophets, work. Micah will start with, this is what God says. There's a voice, if you like, has come down to Micah, and Micah speaks this voice from heaven. Whereas Ecclesiastes is less a word from heaven than it is a kind of investigation on earth. So the way it's framed is this teacher saying, I saw, I observed, this is what I've seen under the sun. Now, we know that he's carried along by wisdom as he does it, so we can trust the Spirit is inspiring this investigation. But the feel of it is less, thus says the Lord, than this is what I saw on earth. This is the investigation that I've made. The phrase that you get most frequently is under the sun. If you like, it's under a closed heaven. This is what I've seen as I look at earth. And in many ways, it's quite an interesting book to read alongside perhaps those who wouldn't call themselves Christians. Here is this king's observation of what he sees on earth. I wonder whether it fits with your observation of what you see in the world. So as he conducts this investigation, what is it that he discovers? First, and the main thing that he discovers is this: life is a breath. Life is a breath. Meaningless, meaningless, says the teacher. Utterly meaningless. Everything is meaningless. Now, one of the key things actually as you get to grips with Ecclesiastes is how do you translate that word? Habel is the Hebrew. And literally it means vapor, breath, smoke. That's the gist of it. And I think that's quite important. Often people read Ecclesiastes and say, meaningless, well, it's all about the kind of dissatisfaction or emptiness of life. There is an element of that. But it seems to me the main thing that Ecclesiastes is showing us is just the brevity of life. It's just here today, gone tomorrow. Life is just a breath. It's just temporary. It's just transient. And I guess the older we get, we kind of feel that, don't we? Gosh, where did that go? You know, gosh, I'm now middle-aged. Where did my youth disappear to? It's just a breath. It's just transient. And that's really the point of this great circle in chapter 1. The world goes round and round and round and round. You know, generations come, generations go, but the earth remains forever. You know, the earth, that's long-standing, but generations, they just come and they go. Verse 11, no one remembers the former generations, even those yet to come will not be remembered by those who follow them. It is the sheer brevity of life. You live your life for 70, 80 years, and then you have your funeral and people share a few stories at the wake, and then off you go. They'll just get on with life. You've disappeared and everybody else will just keep going. It's a bit depressing, isn't it? But that is what's... if you have great hopes that 30 years after you die, everybody will be sitting around remembering you, they really won't. They'll have forgotten all about you. Because that's just the way life works. Round and round we go, we die, and we're forgotten. Breath. It's just a vapor. We just move on. And that applies to everything. You've got the list on the screen. But what the teacher does is he works his way through life, and basically he's got this pointy stick that approaches something in life and goes, pop, Habel. It's just a breath. And he does it with, well, pretty much everything. You get chapter 2, verses 10 to 11. He works on great projects. Verse 4, chapter 2, I built myself houses and planted vineyards. And then chapter 2, verse 11, or 2, verse 10, I deny myself nothing my eyes desired. I refuse my heart no pleasure. My heart took delight in all my labor. And this was the reward for all my toil. I surveyed all that my hands had done and what I toiled to achieve. Everything was just a breath, a chasing after the wind. Nothing was gained under the sun. And then he tries to be wise. The fate of the fool, though, will overtake me also. What then do I gain by being wise? 2:15. I said to myself, this too is meaningless. It's just a breath. Or work, verse 17. All of it is meaningless. A chasing after the winds. Or chapter 2, verse 23, people laboring and they're toiling and they're anxious because of all the work that they're doing. All their days, their work is grief and pain. Even at night, their minds do not rest. This too is just meaningless. It's just a breath. So great projects, wisdom, work. Pop, pop, pop. It's just a breath. You're going to die in the end. And then we get to chapter 5, verse 7. I'm actually missing out several of these. Much dreaming and many words are meaningless. Again, lots of words, lots of dreams about what the future. Pop, pop. It's just taken away. It's just a breath. Or money. Trying to get wealthy, trying to accumulate possessions, trying to make our houses look wonderful. 5 verse 10, whoever loves money never has enough. Have you noticed? Those who are rich then basically spend most of their time working out how to be even richer. Whoever loves wealth is never satisfied with their income. This too is meaningless. It's just a breath. It doesn't last. It's going to be removed. Or chapter 6, verse 12. Who knows what is good for a person in life during the few and meaningless breath-like days? They pass through like a shadow. Again, just a breath, just a shadow. Or the injustice of the world, chapter 7, verse 15, even that isn't something that lasts. In this meaningless life of mine, I've seen both of these, the righteous perishing in their righteousness, the wicked living long in their wickedness. As you look at life, don't you, you sometimes see people who've had great lives, they've done good stuff, they die young. And the people who seem to be wicked seem to last and have good lives. And he says, it's just a breath. Don't read too much into it. It's just a breath. Even marriage is included. This is the verse, nobody has ever let me preach on a wedding day. Enjoy life with your wife whom you love. All the days of this meaningless life that God has given you under the sun. All your meaningless days. I'd love to preach that at a wedding. Hey, great. It's just a breath. Don't get too excited by it. You're obsessing about marriage, pop. Because, it's not going to last. And to be honest, I've begun to realize this. Chapter 11, verse 10. Banish anxiety from your heart. Cast off the troubles of your body for youth and vigor. Pop. Meaningless. I remember when sort of there used to be hair down to here. Yeah, no, I do. It used to be the case. Seriously, I used to be able to have hair that covered my forehead. And it's just pop, away it goes. And in case you've doubted it, chapter 12, verse 10, meaningless, meaningless, says the teacher, everything is meaningless. It's all just vapor. It's all just smoke. It is all just a breath. You see, there's the great reality in Ecclesiastes, rather like Hamlet, sort of spoilers for those who haven't seen Hamlet yet, but everybody dies in the end. Yeah, that's the world. Everybody dies. It's all just a breath passing through, and you're not going to be remembered much longer after you've gone. You see, that is the great theme that comes up again and again. You find it in chapter 2, verse 18. Why is life a breath? Life is a breath because of the universality of death. The teacher says, I hated all the things I told for under the sun because I must leave them to the one who comes after me. You know, you build up a great business, but frankly, you're going to die. You have to pass it on to somebody. Or you get this in chapter 3. The fate of human beings is like that of the animals. The same fate awaits them both. As one dies, so does the other. Life is a breath because we all die. And I always find the poem in chapter 12, why don't you just turn to chapter 12. I always find this poem incredibly moving. Let me read chapter 12, verses 1 to 5. Remember your Creator in the days of your youth. Before the days of trouble come, and the years approach when you will say, I find no pleasure in them. Before the sun and the light and the moon and the stars grow dark, and the clouds return after the rain. When the keepers of the house tremble and the strong men stoop. When the grinders cease because they're few, and those looking through the windows grow dim. When the doors of the street are closed and the sound of grinding fades, when people rise up at the sound of birds, but all their songs grow faint, when people are afraid of heights and of danger in the streets, when the almond tree blossoms and the grasshopper drags itself along and desire no longer is stirred, then people go to their eternal home and mourners go about the streets. I think that's an incredibly moving poem about old age. That's what it's about, actually. Do you notice? As old age comes and pleasure is diminished, you struggle to be able to see. The moon and the stars grow dark. You struggle to eat. Grinders cease because they're few. You lose your teeth. When the doors of the street are closed, the sound of grinding fades. When actually you're scared of going out. When people are afraid of heights and of danger in the streets. Again, it's one of the moving things about old age. I don't want to go out in the dark. Don't know what will happen when desire no longer is stirred, and then you die. Then people go to their eternal home, and mourners go about the streets. And again, Ecclesiastes is just brutally realistic, actually, about the perils of old age and the difficulties of getting older. Until what happens is the mourners go about the streets, and verse 7, the dust returns to the ground it came from. And the spirit returns to God who gave it. And after the end of his investigation, he basically is saying, life is just a breath, because we're all going to get older, and we're all going to die. And if you think about it, that is the ultimate pointy stick, isn't it? Yeah, you can build up a business if you like, but you're going to have to leave it to somebody else, and frankly, you don't know what they're going to do with it, because you'll be busy getting old and dying. You can get married, but at some point, one of you is going to die, and then the other one will. It won't last forever. You can have pleasure for a bit, and pleasure for a bit is nice, but it doesn't stop the fact that one day you're going to die. Well, that's been cheerful. But it's important, isn't it? Yeah, you know, just the brutal realism of it is important. Yeah, I've got a good friend of mine who, you know, so often he says, I just find it so hard to live as a Christian. I'm so tempted to wander away. And yet he says to me, every time I'm tempted to wander away, I just realize life without God and there's just nothing but preparing to die. And actually, that's one of the things that keeps him going as a Christian. Just the brutal realism of you take God out, life under the sun, is just merrily plodding our way towards the grave. And we do need to be realistic about that. In some ways, the last couple of years has been pretty brutal, hasn't it, in reminding us of the reality of death, because day after day after day, you see the figures. And of course, that was the reality of life even before the pandemic, just wasn't advertised as such. In an average day in 2019, so pre-pandemic, 1,650 people in the UK die every day. Yeah, actually, that's just the reality. The pandemic didn't actually shift things by about 7 or 8%. It wasn't actually that huge in the big scheme of things. Even before a pandemic, 1,650 people die every day. It's just life. It's just the way it works. And that's what the preacher wants us to know. It's a New Testament observation as well. So here's James. James tells us, "You are a mist that appears for a little while and then vanishes." It's almost a sort of quote from Ecclesiastes, in effect. Just a breath, just a smoke, just vapor. Why is it like that? Yeah, why the reality of death? Why is this the world? Sorry, I should have put this on the screen, actually. But let me quote Ecclesiastes 1, verse 13. Ecclesiastes chapter 1, verse 13. "I applied my mind to study and to explore by wisdom all that is done under the heavens. What a heavy burden God has laid on mankind." Or chapter 3, verse 10. "I've seen the burden God has laid on the human race." And so Ecclesiastes is saying, here's the reality of life. It's brief, it's a breath, and then you die. And that is a burden that God has laid on the human race. Again, the New Testament will say the same. Creation was subjected to frustration. You know, again, just this reality of death, this lack of fulfillment, not by its own choice, but by the will of the one who subjected it. Why the reality of a world where we just, you know, die and then are forgotten? Actually, Ecclesiastes, the preacher, will say that somehow is in the hands of God. It is God who has subjected the world to frustration. Why? Why is that the case? Well, Ecclesiastes 7 gives us a hint. Ecclesiastes 7, verse 29, "This only have I found. God created mankind upright, but they have gone in search of many schemes," Ecclesiastes 7 says. In other words, God made the world good, but human beings have sought out sin and evil, gone in search of many schemes. And the result is that death has entered the world. This breath-like existence wasn't God's original plan for the world. Human beings were supposed to walk with God. But as a result of walking in the opposite direction, death has entered the world. It's quite interesting trying to put wisdom literature together, actually. In many ways, I think Proverbs is largely reflect on the fact that the world is created. You know, Proverbs is kind of saying, if you walk vaguely in line with the Creator's plan, life will go well for you. Proverbs, I think, is a great reflection on life in a created world. Ecclesiastes is a reflection on life in a fallen world. You know, this is the case when life is broken. This is life in a world where death has entered. Ecclesiastes, life under the sun, where because of the fall, life is just a breath. We're all going to die. Well, let me pause there with that cheerful thought and actually get you to talk in groups with other mortal people. This kind of question, why is this perspective useful or important? I mean, it might not be the most cheerful way to spend 20 minutes so far on a Sunday afternoon, but why does the teacher want us to know this? Why is this perspective important? And how does it actually help us with life? So 7 or 8 minutes, talk to other people and see what conclusions you come to. Shall I quote that? So, for part two, here's our question. We're going to die. So, how do we cope with that? What does it mean to do life well when life is just a breath? Three principles. First, enjoy life where you can. Enjoy life where you can. Now, that might be a surprising answer, but actually it is the answer that Ecclesiastes gives. So, to just follow these verses through with me. So, Ecclesiastes 2, verse 24. A person can do nothing better than to eat and drink and find satisfaction in their own toil. This too I see is from the hand of God. For without him, who can eat or find enjoyment? Or chapter 3, verse 12. I know that there is nothing better for people than to be happy and to do good while they live, that each one of us may eat and drink and find satisfaction in all their toil. This is a gift of God. Or chapter 3, verse 22. I saw that there is nothing better for a person than to enjoy their work because that is their lot. Now, in a sense, it's probably quite surprising that that's the initial answer that Ecclesiastes gives, but it basically says, okay, life is just going to be a breath. It doesn't necessarily have to be a miserable breath. Yeah, there are things that you can actually enjoy. Indeed, actually, that enjoyment comes from God. That even in a fallen world, God gives us things to enjoy. And actually, we probably enjoy it best when we give thanks to him and recognize it as coming from his hands. And you find that poem in chapter 3, which has often been turned into pop songs. You know, this time for everything. Chapter 3, verse 2, a time to be born, a time to die, a time to plant, a time to uproot, a time to kill, a time to heal, a time to tear down, a time to build, a time to weep, a time to laugh, a time to mourn, a time to dance, a time to scatter stones, a time to gather them, a time to embrace, a time to refrain from embracing, I don't know, when we're socially distanced, but a time to search and a time to give up, a time to keep, a time to throw away, a time to tear and a time to mend, a time to be silent and a time to speak, a time to love, a time to hate, a time for war, a time for peace. I think that gives us kind of the bittersweet nature of this breath-like life. You know, there are times, aren't there, which are good, times which will be marked by good things like embracing and loving and dancing and laughing and building. And a time, tragically, when in this world life is marked by death and killing and weeping and mourning and tearing. That's what life's like, isn't it? You know, one day it's a great day. You're having a good catch-up with friends, with good food and a good football match to watch. And then you have another day where you feel sick, where you're lonely, you're bored and in tears. It's life, isn't it? It's just what it's like. It's funny, actually, I'm not very good at this, but I'm trying to train myself. When people ask me the question, you know, Andy, how are you? Yeah, fine. I'm trying to stop saying fine. What I'm often saying these days are ups and downs, because that's life, isn't it? It's what it's always like. And that's the teacher in his wisdom saying, that's what to expect. And those good times you get, those times of dancing and laughing and embracing, well, receive those as a gift of God. And actually, probably one of the wisdom points from this book is, if actually we consciously thank God for them, that's likely to enhance our enjoyment, actually. It's actually as you consciously say, this is a good thing to given to me by God, let me enjoy it as his good gift. So Ecclesiastes does say, even in a world that is just a breath, there is the opportunity for brief enjoyment as a gift of God. In passing, by the way, that's why in the end I'm not totally convinced by the argument that says Ecclesiastes is all about the kind of existential emptiness about life in this world. Because it is saying there are stuff in this world you can actually enjoy. Just realize it's only temporary. Because life is a breath. But then secondly, remember your Creator. Remember your Creator. Let's head back to chapter 12. Which does move into this picture of old age and teeth falling out and eyes not being able to see and desire no longer being stirred before we return to dust. And it starts, chapter 12, verse 1, remember your Creator in the days of your youth. in many ways, Ecclesiastes gives quite a different message to the one often we would give to teenagers. You often, I still hear it, you know, the world is your oyster. You can be whoever you want to be. You know, follow your dreams. And the preacher would say, pop. No, no, you're going to die, so remember your creator while you're young. That's kind of what it would say to young people. You know, get it clear from the outset that you're a creature and that God is your creator. Remember your creator. You know, sometimes you're walking along and you see the funeral cortege passing. That's the moment to say, I'm just a creature. I'm just a creature. Just somebody created who one day will return to dust. And so the way to live is to remember that if I'm a creature, I have a creator, one who made me, and one to whom I'm ultimately accountable. Let me read the last verses of Ecclesiastes. Now all has been heard. Here is the conclusion of the matter. Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is the duty of all mankind. For God will bring every deed into judgment, including every hidden thing, whether it is good or evil. I mentioned last week as we were looking at Proverbs that fear God is probably the main headline of wisdom literature. God is God, and I am not. And he is the creator, he is the judge before whom I will stand one day. And as you go through wisdom literature, you find essentially different reasons to fear God. So it's how the book of Job ends. And there the kind of fear God is to do just with the sheer greatness of God. You know, why fear God? Well, because he was there when the earth was made and I wasn't. You know, it's just the sheer grandeur of God makes you fear him. In Proverbs, you fear God largely because it's the best way to live, actually. It's just the wise way to live. Fear God because that's how life will go best for you. In Ecclesiastes, it's fear God because of our fundamental limits. You know, Ecclesiastes, there's not a huge amount in Ecclesiastes about the sheer grandeur and greatness of God. Ecclesiastes is more about how finite and brief we are. And as you put those three things together, the sheer grandeur of the Creator, the best way to live, our brevity, those are reasons to bow before the one who made us. Now, Song of Songs will take us in a different direction. So this is the last time I'm going to talk about fear of the Lord in wisdom literature. And so I just want to get us back to that point, because I think we can have that amnesia of fearing God. God just becomes commonplace to us because we just speak about him all the time. When were we last in awe before him? Lord, you made the world, and I'm just a breath. We're in a completely different league. And life is best when I recognize that and I bow before him. It's actually good to encourage us to reflect on our mortality as we're doing, so that we will learn to be in awe of the one who is eternal. Enjoy life where you can. Remember your creator. Lastly, look to Jesus. Look to Jesus. I think Ecclesiastes is a curious book, because if I can put it like this, probably in some ways more than most books, even in the Old Testament, Ecclesiastes is a true book, but an incomplete book. You know, much of the answers aren't in Ecclesiastes. And if you think about it, that's because of the vantage point that the preacher adopts. The preacher really does just look at life under the sun. There's not a lot of heaven breaking in Ecclesiastes. It's just, let me observe life in this world. And as I look around at the world, I see the problems. As yet, I don't really see the solution. And that's probably true of Ecclesiastes. There isn't much solution in it. You get the dilemma in chapter 3, verse 10 and 11. I've seen the burden God has laid on the human race. He's made everything beautiful in its time. He's also set eternity in the human heart, yet no one can fathom what God has done from beginning to end. And if you think about it, that's the human condition, isn't it? The human condition is a vague sense of, oh, there's probably something out there. You know, people talk vaguely about somebody dying, and oh, yeah, they're probably looking down on us. It's very vague, though, isn't it? There's a vague sense there might be something beyond now, but we don't really know. If you think about it, that's the human condition. You know, this is popular sort of theology, if you like. Something after this, no idea what, really. And if you think about it, from under the sun, that's as best as you can get. Some vague sense that there might be something beyond this world. And yet God hasn't, from the perspective of under the sun, given us the ability to understand it. That's why, to be honest, Ecclesiastes is decidedly vague about what happens beyond the grave. I mean, it does talk about judgment, but you also get this, chapter 3, verse 21. Who knows if the human spirit rises upward and if the spirit of the animal goes down into the earth? To be honest, in Ecclesiastes, there is a kind of, we're going to die and who knows? It's probably about the limit, if you like, of Ecclesiastes, because, well, from the vantage point of under the sun, who knows? The only answer is going to come is if somebody from eternity steps in. If somebody comes from beyond the sun to answer those questions. That's the only way that that dilemma is going to be resolved. If the eternity that God has put in our hearts that we can't grasp is somehow explained to us. Ecclesiastes is a book that sets up our need for Jesus. It sets up the fact that we're all going to die. And in itself, Ecclesiastes, it seems to me, doesn't quite provide the answer to that. What's needed is somebody to step in, somebody to come from heaven into earth. And you see, when Jesus comes to earth, he opens up eternity. He opens up the truths about life beyond the grave. That's why the Christian can say, to quote Paul, we fix our eyes not on what is seen, but on what is unseen. For what is seen is temporary, but a breath, but what is unseen is eternal. You know, that verse from 2 Corinthians chapter 4, it picks up that what is seen, life under the sun, is just the temporary bits. The breath-like bit. It's actually the unseen eternal world that Jesus comes to open our eyes to that gives us the true meaning in life. You see, the pointy stick of Ecclesiastes will burst everything we hope in this world. Career, temporary. Pleasure, temporary. Wealth, temporary. Marriage, temporary. All just a breath. Death will end all of them. And that leaves us with only one place to go. Jesus says, I am the resurrection and the life. The one who believes in me will live, even though they die. And so let's go back to our talent show where we started. 21-year-old Tracy living for this dream of being a great singer, even though she can't do a note in tune. To be honest, that is actually the human condition. People wandering around, living for stuff that is just going to be a breath. And it says as those things are popped, that it helps us to live for what is going to last forever. Jesus says, I'm the resurrection and the life. So, enjoy life where you can. But always have that sense, even as you're enjoying something. Thank you, Lord. Help me to realize it's not going to last. And help me to divert my attention to what will last forever. Well, why don't you go back into your groups and maybe turn some of those thoughts into prayer. Maybe praying that the Lord would help us both to enjoy life but to realize the transient nature of it and to look to the one who will last forever. So why don't we go back into our groups and pray, and then I'll bring us together for our closing song.